Hi friends, we're launching something very special here at Smart Beauty and I'm so excited to tell you about it. We're looking for a few select beauty entrepreneurs to become our case study clients. And yes, we plan to get you absolutely amazing results that we can both show off. But here's the thing, we're looking for someone very specific. One, you need to be serious about growing and scaling your beauty business. Two, you're struggling to define your brand story and tone of voice. And three, you can keep a secret about what we're working on behind the scenes. If this sounds like you, email hello@smartbeautycreative.com or DM us over on Instagram. Our handle is smartbeautycreative. We're only taking on a handful of clients for this special opportunity and applications close soon. Let's transform your beauty business together. Hello and welcome to the Smart Beauty Podcast. I'm your host, Viola Levy, beauty journalist and founder of copy-led branding agency, Smart Beauty Creative. We're here to create your brand voice and craft the story behind it. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by one of my industry icons, the legendary Poppy King, a pioneer in the beauty industry and the ultimate lipstick aficionado. Poppy is one of the first beauty entrepreneurs who truly mastered the art of makeup and storytelling. She launched her first brand, Poppy, at just 18 years old, driven by a passion for reviving the glamour and sophistication of classic lipsticks. Her bold, pigment-rich creations quickly gained cult status, establishing her as a leading voice in the beauty world. From founding Lipstick Queen to collaborating with global brands, Poppy's career has been defined by her unwavering belief in the transformative power of a great lipstick. Beyond product innovation, she's also a mentor and champion for beauty entrepreneurs, offering invaluable insights into the art of building a brand with purpose. Poppy, welcome to the show. I'm so delighted to be chatting with you today.
Oh my God. And I was like, that what an introduction. I was like, who's she talking about? It's like, me? thank you so much. That is an amazing summation of 30 years. I'm thrilled to be here, and I still can't believe I've ever managed to make a living out of designing lipstick. You know, it's still
a dream job, right?
The novelty of it has still not worn off. It's 32 years later and I still can't quite believe it.
And so for like new audiences, why lipstick? Because I'm sure you've been asked this question countless times, but
What is it about
lipstick that has captivated you for so long?
Well, I guess ever since I first discovered it, you know, playing dress-ups when I was seven, you know, and the interesting thing is, like, I wasn't a girly girl, like a pink girly girl. I was much more sort of, I guess, trying to be a seductress at seven than I was trying to be a ballerina, you know. I was, you know, kind of like straight into sort of like the femme fatale aesthetic, I think because my mother had that and around a lot of kind of art and you know, bohemia and stuff like that. So I think for me, when I first was playing dress ups, I wasn't playing it in a girly way. I was playing it in a much more sort of, you know, trying to see what I look like as an adult way. And everything really had, I was, you know, mesmerized by all the accoutrement of being female, hats, shoes, this, that. But then when I put on lipstick for the first time, I just realized that it's sort of so much deeper. The change in me was so much deeper, even as a little girl, that, I mean, I didn't know the word yet, but what I felt was rather than a sort of confidence that came from inside. It wasn't like I looked on the outside and was like, oh my God, now I look so beautiful, I can do anything. It was just more kind of like, okay, you know, I put my lipstick on, I'm ready, like a superhero cape. It's like, okay, like I now have a special power that I didn't have before. And, you know, that really, what's that, sorry?
Tapped into a part of yourself somehow.
Absolutely. And I think it was just such a raw sort of experience of kind of like understanding that lipstick is not really cosmetic, you know, like kind of it's closer to fragrance in its relationship with your sense of self. You know, mascara, makeup, all that kind of stuff. I mean, they're cosmetic. Like they enhance or correct or conceal or kind of. But lipstick is something completely different, as is fragrance. It's just much more about what suits you on the inside as well. Like who you are in your spirit is much more of a factor in your lipstick choice than your colouring, you know, which I've really come to understand. And I think for me, lipstick, you know, it coincided with the time when I was reading a lot of incredible narratives, Alice in Wonderland, Wind in the Willow, you know, like all these amazing books. And I was around seven. So I was reading all, you know, in the fairy tales and all that. And so for me, at seven, you know, discovering lipstick at the same time as discovering those narratives, the two things sort of became together. And it was almost like lipstick was my rabbit hole that I went down to be like Alice.
And were there any kind of icons that you looked up to or were really inspired by when you were growing up?
Yes, but not on a, I mean, I think the person, I think the person that most inspired me when I'm growing up, and kind of like in retrospect, it makes sense, and really defined me, believe it or not, was the character of Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory. You know, that really, I think out of every kind of icon, kind of like that really had the most formative effect on me of kind of the idea that a product can be magic, and you can make magic product for people in a way that is just so delightful, you know. So kind of like, so I think for me, the most defining person of my entire beauty career is Willy
It's
Wonka.
like one of the best muses, I think, in when it comes to like makeup and beauty.
Oh, you know, absolutely. I mean, like I really was really reading a lot at that time, and I read over and over again, you know, the Roald Dahl. Like, I'm not talking about the Disney idea of Willy Wonka, but the original idea of Willy Wonka. And there was something that just appealed to me so much in that type of person, where, because, you know, funnily enough, like he is a contradiction in character. I find that I've had a that contradiction in character between extrovert and introvert, and so he provided the roadmap. And or and honestly, to this day, if I'm really stuck at a crossroads and I feel really confused, I just have to go back into, well, what would Willy Wonka do with this set of circumstances?
Yeah. It's a shame someone like him isn't kind of the host of The Apprentice or something, because that would be a much
Oh my God, wouldn't that be absolutely? I actually did, you know, during the pandemic, I really had to amuse myself because lipstick going behind masks, you know, it was definitely a time when everything stopped. But certainly, if there was anything that stopped, was the need for lipstick, that's for sure. I did actually do, I did record myself doing an interview with a fictional Willy Wonka, like asking him all of it. And I also recorded an interview with me, recording an interview with Barbie about beauty. So, like, I was just going right into the very, very early beginnings of my fascination of lipstick when I was sort of on my own in the pandemic. It was like, okay, what was this all about? And you know, and it was sort of like the combination of sort of like, I don't want to be Barbie, I want to be Willy Wonka.
yeah. Did you kind of experiment with your mum's lipsticks growing up? Did you do what we all did?
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, my mother is you know, we didn't grow up wealthy. My father died when I was very young. So my mother is a working mother, a single, supported two children, but very an incredible eye for style. And I guess you'd call her, she's like, you know, she was an influencer before there were influencers, like a real trend kind
Amazing.
of caster. And she, so she used to wear dark blood coloured, ox blood coloured Bieber lipsticks from Bieber in the 70s. So, you know, I often wonder, like, if my mother had been a coral lipstick wearer, like, would any of this have happened? Not that I've got anything against coral, I just don't like it when there's too much white in it. See, the problem with coral is once you put white in it, which most people do, it looks fake instead of looking like an actual coral from the sea. And when you do a lipstick that actually looks like a coral from the sea, it's a whole different thing.
Yeah. And where you were growing up in Australia, was that kind of a beauty kind of hub? Was there a lot of kind of stuff around you at the time?
No, in Melbourne. So I was growing. So as a child, it was the era of it was the 70s. So I was born in 72, and then as a teenager, it was the 80s. So as a child, so and for in Australia back then, even now, has very much a beach culture idea of beauty.
Outdoorsy,
It's
yeah.
outdoorsy. I think until, in the 90s, when people like Nicole Kidman and Cate Blanchett and stuff like that came along, that was sort of like a newer version of Australian beauty ideal. But certainly for me, I did not fit, do not fit, the Australian beauty ideal. And I was very aware of that, pretty quickly, because I went to an all-girls school and it was a very conservative school. And, so I was very aware that I looked like something that I saw, and I didn't look like anything that I saw in magazines or at point of sale or at beauty. I looked more like, things that I saw in old books or kind of, in unusual gallery, like I sort of was able to, I could see the kind of, okay, so in art, there's all different variations of being female. But yet when I go into a department store, there's just kind of one or two, like kind of which, and so I think for me, it was that sort of contrast of like, of understanding either I'm going to embrace the fact that I look like something from a different century.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to, make the choice to sort of to lessen that. And there are all sorts of, there's plastic surgery, there's all sorts of things that you can do to lessen the more unique features. And I decided to see what life would be like, holding on to them, even though it's not something that I necessarily felt confident about. It's just that I felt like I think that we all have the right to be beautiful in a non-standardized way.
That's what I really love about your kind of beauty aesthetic and your brand in general, that it's not about conforming to some sort of conventional beauty ideal. It's about adopting a persona or taking on, like, tapping into
Exactly. It's
aspects of yourself.
always been, thank you. And that's kind of like, and like in one of the things, and I don't really, I'm not a big believer in like you are the perfect person because you watch with an aerial view everything the industry is doing. And I just can't stand value flagging. I can't stand it. I feel like once you value flag, kind of point out our pictures aren't airbrushed or this, that, once you start doing that, for me, it's marketing. It's not actually being the change you wish to see. And one of the things that I've done in the last 30 years that I have to say, has not led to me making the most amount of money I personally could make, but has certainly led to me feeling a sense of purpose is, I've never ever shown at point of sale models or celebrities or this. I've only ever shown graphic art, illustration, different artists show, like different illustration. If you think about lipstick, someone like Frog Prince or Medieval, like when you actually think back on it and kind of, and I don't, like I said, it's not something I'm going to put on my website or anything like that, because I feel like once you say, I've just done it like quietly for 30 years. I have never once shown, even when I've worked with other brands, a kind of standard, like a standardized idea of here's the lipstick I'm putting forward and here's what I'm saying you should emulate. I never, it's just always about the art.
Yeah, I read something that you wrote about how a woman is either a witch or a princess, but why can't you be both? And I just really.
Exactly, and that's the thing, is kind of like it is so, even in 2025, it really, there really is that absolute distinction of kind of like you're either a princess, and aspire to that, or you're a witch and you're not to be trusted. There's sort of like this binary idea of what a witch is and a binary idea of what a princess is. And as much as Disney, keeps trying and failing, frankly, to sort of modernize that because they're not doing it with authenticity. The fact is kind of like we all, we all have a shadow side, whatever side. And, in fact, I actually feel like my shadow side is not the witch side, it's the princess side. The side that tortures me is the princess, not the witch.
In what sense? Like, could it?
Well, the princess that kind of like the prince, I feel like the princess is the one that kind of is much more critical. Princesses to me are much, it's so much more about an idea of perfection, whereas the witch has got so much more scope.
Yeah. I mean, the witches are always like the more interesting characters, really, aren't they? So.
Exactly. So, which princess, is really very much about the idea that kind of, it's a non-binary idea of what those two archetypes are.
Yeah, and I think yours is just a great example of a brand that is subverting beauty standards. It's not just, contributing to them, which I think is
No, absolutely no. I mean, kind of like my, sort of my role, I've always felt once I sort of like stumbled into this and kind of realized, okay, this is a real, I've got a real sense of purpose behind this, in my kind of like my role is just kind of like to be sort of a fly in the ointment. Like I'm not looking to beat everyone at their own game. Do you know what I mean? I'm
Yeah.
looking to sort of like do it. And it's meant that I don't, I've watched peers of mine, particularly now that I've been 32 years doing this, I've watched many peers of mine who've started after me shoot past me financially, funding wise, all the, kind of I can think of, people like Charlotte Tilbury or whatever, who I've known for a long, and I see, and Lisa Eldridge, like I've known these, these women for a long time, and they're great people, I'm very, and I've seen them just go shooting past me in terms of kind of like their backing, their this or that, and all that kind of stuff. And it's just, it's not for me. It's not, that's not, I believe I can ultimately, and I have in the past and will continue to build in varying iterations, highly profitable, very imaginative lipsticks that are universally wearable. So it's not something that's not inclusive, but incredibly imaginative that you actually feel like you've discovered something new about yourself through this lipstick, and kind of like, and I'm not putting anything on the market that I don't feel can has the potential to do it because I don't, I'm very, very conscious of the horror of single-use plastic. I very much believe that single-use plastic is going to be and should be much more regulated within the beauty industry in the next. And so my real thinking ahead at the moment is how, and I've come up with it, I've really got, pulled it together, is how can you do lip color and the delivery of lip color in a way that is much less aggressive on the environment. And so for me, I'm just sort of constantly trying to think not only of kind of how can I do actual amazing lip products that give you such a sense of discovery that you sort of feel a whole new trap door, you found a trap door in yourself, but also how can we start to be, how can we start to do this differently? Because the single-use plastic for in the beauty industry has to be, it absolutely has to be regulated and soon.
100%, especially for a product like lipstick, right? Which is very sort of people are, it's a single use product. People are using it and discarding it
Terrific.
very frequently.
I mean, if I mean, and it's such a sort of oxymoronic thing, and anybody in the industry, because I know a lot of people that listen to your podcast are kind of industry people, will say that it's so frustrating that kind of for me at the moment, I'm forced to do it. There just isn't, I don't have the money to do it a different way. Like it would be so, it's so expensive to do it anything other than the worst possible way for the environment, So I'm just really trying to change that.
Yeah, it's so tricky. I mean, Talking about like the indie beauty scene and how that's kind of exploded. I mean, you're kind of one of the OGs. You were doing it, you kind of preempted that whole kind of indie beauty boom that's happened. I mean, do you think having a focus on just one product category, lipstick, gave you a chance to sort of tell a stronger brand story and have that kind of unique voice in the beauty world at a time where there weren't like any other kind of brand, like buzzy beauty brands that were as interesting?
I think it's been, having the singular focus has been very much a mixed blessing, but I wouldn't do it any other way. But yes, in terms of back to the original days, when I started in 1992 with the Poppy lipstick brand, when I was based in Australia before I moved to New York in 2002, there was me, Mac was just in one counter at Bendall's, Bobby Brown, Shu Uemura, Benefit. And I think we were the sort of the indie, it was before Hard Candy, Urban Decay, like there was that very first little sort of like creative wave, of which I was a part of it. And I think for me, the singular focus on lipsticks, which nobody else has done, even if they started that way, like I think Bobby Brown started with just lipstick, the singular focus on lipstick, has been at times very much a huge asset. In terms of the expertise, the authority, and then at other times it's been somewhat of a liability when you look at the commercial realities of the business in terms of gondolas having to fill product in retail space and real estate. So, it's been but the fact is it's authentic to me. So, so whether it's been a really smart move or a really limiting move, it doesn't really matter because it's the real deal, and that's what shines through, is that kind of there isn't filler product. I've had investors come along and do it over and over again, tried to make all this filler product, within the brand, and it never works. And, I know I listen to your industry commentary and everything. I mean, the filler product, once you start getting into filler product, to me, it's over.
And terrible for the environment, like you're saying earlier. It's just like
Absolutely terrible. You shouldn't be,
no one needs.
people shouldn't be allowed to be making these, I mean, people shouldn't be allowed to be making these decisions about hundreds of thousands of units of plastic. I mean, look, I don't want to get started, but it's really, and it is not something, I mean, it is not something I take lightly. If I'm going to bring a lipstick out, my God, it better be something that there isn't already out there, something that has some added sort of intelligence to it that's going to enhance kind of your whole scent. I'm just not going to bring out, it's a crime. I actually feel like it's a crime to bring out same product at this point, an absolute crime.
Definitely. I mean, you can't have an environmental message and then be doing that. You're kind of contradicting yourself.
And I, like I said, none of this, all of this, anybody listening to this would be like complete news if you went about me. Like if you went onto the website, I'm not banging on, kind of like it's not for me, this is not about value flagging before I do it. This is about figuring out and then showing the way and changing the whole practice versus talking and talking and talking about it and so as soon as I've got this as soon as I've got this sorted. And I really, that really is my sort of grand finale, is that I'd like to leave the industry with a way, ways, delivery systems to bring color to the face that are much, much, much more sustainable. And it's not about refills necessarily, because refills create a whole lot of other issues. The plastic they have to come in, they can't, it's something different. It's a whole, and I've actually cracked it. Now I just have to get it patented.
Very noble mission.
Thank you.
I'd love to hear a bit more about your early career because a lot of teenagers might think, well, I'd love to have a lipstick line, but you actually went out and did it. Like, how did that all come about? Because I just
Well, really, well, it's funny because at the moment I'm actually, one of your questions is what's the new, what's coming up in the brand. And actually at the moment I'm writing my first, probably my last, but definitely my first memoir. So I'm writing a memoir.
Oh, fantastic.
It's really It's really the memoir of, and the subtitle's Memoir of an Unlikely Entrepreneur, because which tells you that kind of like I, as a teenager, there wasn't anything that particularly pointed to. I wasn't a particularly driven, there wasn't anything that you would look at and sort of say, oh, that makes total sense. She was sort of so focused and fascinated with me. It was more that, in that kind of Willy Wonka spirit, when I kind of couldn't find lipstick that I liked the colors, and then when I figured out why, because they were color, the colors weren't sort of like the 1940s, and I liked those colors. As I sort of like unpacked it, like why I didn't like any of the lipsticks on the market. At the same time as unpacking that, I started to sort of like in that Willy Wonka naive kind of way as a teenager, just think, well, maybe there's a lipstick factory somewhere and like a chocolate factory, and I can get lipsticks made that are not shiny and shimmery, but more like the 1940s. So, and so it was literally that kind of sort of kind of innocent ability to sort of think that something was possible, and it actually was. I did. I found a factory through the phone book in Australia that could make lipsticks if I could guarantee a minimum order. I found, it took me about a year and a half, and like in each time I solved another little part of it, the bigger it just sort of starts to come together. And I've had to spend the last 5 years, I've had a real, midlife crisis, I'd say, in many ways, in terms of kind of like mid-career, sort of, what am I doing this for? Who am I doing it? Why am I doing it? All that kind of, all those kind of questions. And I've really had to, in the last 5 years since the pandemic, really reteach myself how to be the person I was when I started, which is somebody who just believes it could be possible, and what's the harm in trying?
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, like looking back, what would you wish you'd have known? But it sounds like it's the other way.
Oh, I can tell you what I wish I would have known. Absolutely. And I wish I would have known, and God, I almost feel like tearing up, that you do not need, oh God, really, I am going to tear up, like this is, that you do not need anyone's permission to be creative. You might need someone's permission to practice dentistry or be a surgeon or be that, there are a lot of things that you need permission for, because, but when it comes to being creative, you don't ever have to ask somebody permission to acknowledge you as a creative person. That's something that you have innately. We all do. We just get it very suppressed. It's just, it depends on how we relate to that, and never, ever, ever wait for business to give you the permission to be creative. Never.
And that was something that you felt kind of the opposite when you were younger, like other people made you feel like that was conditional.
Yes, I mean, I guess it's not so much, it's more when it's not even so much when I'm younger. It was more, it's more to do with that. We have creativity confused with material success, people, and so therefore I was sort of waiting for a certain level of material success to be able to feel to myself that I was actually indeed a creative person. And it's got nothing to do with success or failure. It's got to, creativity. It's got to do with an ongoing exploration inside yourself that is legitimate, no matter what, no matter what the results are. It's in the trying.
So beautifully put.
Thank you.
And how is your, obviously your brand has spanned several decades. How has your approach to marketing and storytelling evolved throughout that time?
Not quite several decades, 3 decades, several decades, not
Incredible, though.
quite.
That's still
But it's so
really
funny because the people say to me when I'm in Australia in particular, kind of people say, oh, I remember your brand from the 70s. And I'm like, no, it wasn't the
it
70s.
feels like it's been around that. That's a feather in your cap, I'd say. That's
No, I
awesome.
take that as a compliment. It was part of the fabric of the beauty world. I think that, sorry, you're asking how has things changed in
How's your
the
approach to kind of marketing and storytelling changed throughout that time?
it hasn't really. I think if anything, it's I've gotten more committed to it, you know. I think it's it I always I mean and I didn't, you know, I was going to say your lovely introduction. I really didn't like the real quintessential people, like company that invented unbelievable storytelling around lipstick is Revlon. Like Revlon in the 50s and 60s, and like there is no one like Fire and Ice, Cherries in the Snow. Like there is no company like I'm not. I took a page out of Revlon's book of where you have a lipstick color that has such a big story that it's almost like a kind of like, so it's not hundreds of colors, but it has this massive story behind it. So I just wanted to say that kind of like my approach, you know, was schooled in my mind by the Revlon approach, you know, the sort of, you know, Mad Men, the 60, like that sort of where. And so for me, my commitment to that approach has only gotten stronger of where you have a single product with a really compelling story rather than hundreds of products with very little compelling about it.
So it's kind of like if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely much more, you know, I really am kind of old school kind of in my storytelling, you know, very much kind of like an old school storyteller, you know, craftsperson, you know, and that hasn't changed. The landscape has changed. People's concentration spans have changed, shall we say. I mean, you have to be able, I've, you know, the challenge for me these days is because I have so much content and so much narrative is how do I, in 3 to 4 seconds, like get that across to somebody pretty quickly as to what the point of difference is or what the promise of my brand is, you know, without a massive advertising budget, without using celebrities, without using models, without, how does somebody who touches my brand kind of immediately understand? And I think for me, it's really come down to 4 words that are not necessarily the most sophisticated words, but that really sum it up is the magic of lipstick. Like, that's my brand. It's the magic of lipstick.
And what do you think makes a lipstick truly iconic as opposed to just a passing trend, in your opinion?
When it is something that looks like the human body can create it, right? So any colors that like so any of the colors that have been lasting, like you look at like Vamp, Chanel, or like any of the most iconic Black Honey or this one or that one, any of the most iconic lasting, you know, orgasm, like, you know, shades when it comes to lip color are colors. They're never colors that are artificial. Those are trend colors, like colors that kind of like are art. They're colors like if a color looks like your body actually made it from the inside out and really, really has an unbelievable effect on sort of suddenly pulling everything together, your eyes, your lips, your hair, everything together, that's when a color is transcends trend and just becomes an actual, like I said, like part of the human body. Because the colors, you know, I mean, one of my most iconic colors in my sort of repertoire of sort of brands is was Hello Sailor, which is a sheer navy blue, you know, and you think, well, how could that be? Because the body, think about it, when the body gets bruised, the body can produce blue, but it's just not, but it's a yellow-based blue. You see what it, so for me, only colors that have some grounding either in the human body or in a garden or in the sea or in a field. They have to have a grounding in nature. Anything that just looks straight from a petri dish, it's never going to be an iconic color.
No, I guess it just looks jarring and
Exactly. It
can't.
just looks absolutely, you know, and one of the things, and I'm sorry, ladies, girls, you know, people, One of the things that I've never liked about liquid lipstick is that it's so flat, like kind of you don't see the contours of your lips with it. You don't see the sort of the contour, the convex shape of your lips. You don't, it just looks like something like it just looks like something's landed on your lips. It looks so alien. Like it doesn't look like something that's coming from within out. And so for me, I've just never been, a liquid lipstick. Until I can design a liquid lipstick that looks less alien on your lips, I'm just not into it.
And it feels really chalky, a lot of them, and it's just
But
really.
yeah, but it's just, it flattens the whole territory. Like it just kind of flattens it. It's not at all sensual.
No. And I guess that brings us to a topic that sort of is quite controversial, but lips have been sort of widely talked about in the beauty space, with a lot of people getting lip fillers and, the whole Kylie Jenner effect. And like, so, you saying liquid lipsticks just made me think of like the Kylie Jenner lip kits that like exploded onto the scene, and then and lip fillers and all of that. I mean, how do you kind of what do you make of that? Do you think that that's kind of a passing trend and that we're kind of coming to the end of it, or?
I think what's going to happen in beauty, and I have no judgment, it's of, I mean, I'm somebody who hasn't done any kind of plastic surgery, which actually, is somewhat, which, there's a lot of people in the beauty industry, do tend to, get their nose done, get this, get that, kind of like normalize a little bit more. And I decided not to, for my own reasons. And I've got no judgment against it. I really believe, do what makes you feel better. My personal view is that I think where we're going to go with all this is there's going to be the population, and I don't think it's about age so much as it is more about mindset, who really embrace all that technology and surgery has to offer in terms of features, this, that, everything. I really kind of like really go for it. That's their world. They view each other through that world, like kind of. And then I think there's going to be the people who really sort of a more embrace a sort of more human idea of beauty. Kind of like I think there's going to be the sort of the technology idea of beauty and the human idea of beauty. And you're kind of much going to sort of fall into one or the other. And I think that's sort of where we're going, And I do think that I have to say, personally, I very rarely have seen somebody do those kind of enhancements that I've actually thought, oh, they look a lot better, or kind of like they may feel better, they may, do you know what I mean? But in terms of, I mean, I think lips, if you look again, going back to art, if you don't look at fashion magazines, but if you look at art, if you go to the Met, if you go to the MoMA, if you go to the Google, you will see, in paintings and portraits, all sorts of different lip shapes and considered very beautiful. I mean, it's not this kind of exaggerated lip shape, I think, is a moment in time.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, I have to say for my part that I've to be honest with you, I've always kind of avoided lipstick because I have smaller lips. I'm always worried that a strong color is going to make them sort of more pouty. And yeah, you can kind of
All
see.
I can say, to you and anybody who says that to me, please do a deep dive into Man Ray, right, as an artist, and all the amazing pictures of women with really kind of small lips, beautiful, like kind of like it's just it's not about the size and it's much more about the whole relationship to your face, and really, it is so much more to do with kind of like what you do with your lips is so much more important than what they look like.
No, 100%. And what do you think are kind of the biggest mistakes that you see brands making? Because the industry is like more competitive than ever these days. What are the main kind of things?
The biggest mistake I see most brands making is existing at this point, but honestly, I mean, I can't stand the cash grab of, I mean, what we've seen so far in beauty, and I'll be the first to say it, we have not really seen diversity yet. We've seen a capitalist cash grab at the idea of diversity, right? That's what we've
Themselves on
seen.
the back saying, aren't
Yeah,
we?
exactly.
Great, we
We've
finally
seen a,
created.
exactly. We've seen a marketing shift to diversity. We have yet to actually really, really, as an industry, genuinely have any form of diversity behind the scenes, you know, in terms of the thinking, the goals, this, you know, kind of like we have, you know, like all we've seen is window dressing when it comes to diversity, and that's all about to implode, in my opinion. And I think what we're going to get in beauty is an absolute desire to really, really be able to embrace many different iterations of yourself. The whole beauty industry up until now, as you know, certainly in the 20th century, has been about finding your ideal self. Usually when you're young, that's you at your most beautiful, and just staying as close to that as you possibly can your whole life, you know, as a woman. Like trying not to age as much best you can, trying not to do this, trying not to. I think every era, every decade of a person's life, and particularly a female person who identifies as female and is living as a female's life, is has a different peak and valley in terms of, you know, there's a certain, you know, every like that, you know, you look, there's a certain time in your 30s that you kind of like peak in your 30s, but it's not about holding that, like when you're 40s trying to stay like that. Then there's a 40s idea of you, and then there's a 50s idea of you, and a 60s idea, until the beauty industry, you know, really, really allows you to have to not just be held frozen. Like even people that are supposed to be ambassadors of this, like somebody like Helen Mirren, it's still, there's just this kind of one idea of them that just stays and stays and stays, you know, versus somebody like Tilda Swinton, or like we need to see people and women moving and shifting their image as their values shift.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, they have these 50 something celebrities that are kind of heralded for like, oh, they've redefined what 50 is, but they look
No,
50.
they haven't.
You know, they
No, they haven't.
know.
I mean, they've redefined what really great, you know, taking care of yourself, you know, what kind of like, but you know, and that's the thing is, you know, everybody, of course, asked me about the substance, and had I seen the substance and the substance, the substance, and you know, and you know, I think that The Substance was actually a good movie, but not necessarily for the reasons that people, I think what was really good about The Substance was the fact is it is such a slippery slope. Like once you really start trying to hold on to one idea of yourself in any way, and I'm guilty of it too, you know, kind of like, but once you, like that really is a slippery slope. If you can turn around and embrace that you have different iterations, different peaks, different, you know, I mean, for me, my ultimate beauty icon is probably David Bowie, like somebody that goes, you know, somebody that goes through different, you know, there was his Thin White Duke phase, and then there was Ziggy Stardust, and that, you know, like to me, that's what diversity is, you know, not sort of like how, like not women that have aged really well and have a lot of help in that sort of being put forward as, oh, see, look how diverse we're being.
Yeah.
That's not true. That's just a yet another aspirational standard hidden as diversity.
Yeah, it should be less performative and more just part of a brand's DNA.
Exactly. Basically, my motto is, as a beauty brand or whatever, if I have to tell people I'm doing it, then I'm not doing it well enough. It has to be inherent.
Yeah, that's very wise words. And I feel like there's a resurgence now of women kind of reclaiming their femininity because I don't know about you, when I was growing up, it was always, oh, you have to like be like a man to make it in a man's world, that it was kind of anything feminine or girly was seen as kind of weaker or less than.
Yes.
You couldn't be a feminist and also feminine, whereas now women are like,
Yeah.
well, screw that. I'm done with hustle culture. I'm done with this girl boss idea of what a great life is. And they're kind of reclaiming that, the strength of the quiet strength of being feminine and the great sort of power inherent within that. I mean, where do you to tie all that up, where do you think kind of your brand and lipstick kind of falls within?
Well, well, first of all, I agree with you, and I think what it is it's about understanding your own truth. I don't think there's any you can really, really feel or embrace anything in terms of beauty without first understanding your truth, meaning that something has to feel, it has to feel like it suits your soul, not just that it suits the outside world, that it suits your inside world. For example, if you look at somebody like Scarlett Johansson or Meg Ryan, which is what, kind of like they're two people that have similar coloring. If you were to just discuss them as coloring, eyes blonde, this, blah, 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 but such totally different souls. And so therefore kind of like to be to really understand beauty and to really, really evolve in your beauty, I think it starts with the truth, which is the opposite of what everybody's trying to sell.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And we're almost at the end of our time, but obviously you've got some very exciting things in the pipeline. What are you allowed to kind of tell us about what you've got coming?
Oh yes. Well, so first of all, so I'm writing this fantastic, well, it's great fun, pretty sordid memoir called Gobsmacked. And
Brilliant.
that is going to be so much fun for people to read because it really, really takes you in behind my eyes. It's not just sort of behind my the scenes, but sort of behind my eyes is sort of like this unlikely 30-year career kind of happened. And then I've also I'm looking at bringing back I'm working as very hard to bring back all my top hits, that Frog Prince, Hello Sailor, Medieval, all the top hits of Lipstick Queen, that brand, and then the top hits of my 90s brand Poppy, which had Seven Deadly Sins and Shine. So bringing together a lot of my absolute iconic classics that have never been made since, and I've also developed a whole lot of new innovations. I've got some new transformers coming. I've got some incredible. I mean, I've just got such wonderful, very, very highly imaginative, but wearable lip product coming. And ultimately, what I really want to do is develop a community, a like-minded community of people who are interested in reaching their potential through imagination, not through aspiration. And so, no more aspiring to be, this person or that person. It's like, what can you imagine for yourself? Well, here's a hub of people doing that.
Oh, that's so exciting. I can't wait to
Well, they're a big words. Now I've got to get the financing and all that kind of stuff together. So yes, as somebody with a very big vision, it's not something that unfortunately I wish I could be totally self-financed, but it's not possible. So it or so I always so I the vision comes and then I have to put the pieces together to try to make it happen, and that's what I'm doing.
Well, I think if anyone can get this off the ground, then then it's you. Poppy, thank you so much for joining me today, and thank you so much for your, we'll probably chat to you all day about all of this stuff, but
Oh yes, to be continued, and I just wanted to say, and to all your listeners as well, that I think that you're an absolute brilliant light
oh,
in a
thank you.
dark beauty world, and I am so thrilled to know you and to watch what you're doing and see how it evolves, and that you are part of exactly what we need, which is smart beauty, because beauty is not a vanity issue, it's a human rights one.
100%. That is so sweet. Such lovely words. Thank you so much, Poppy.
Your sweetheart and all your sweethearts.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. All links will be in the show notes, and feel free to visit smartbeautycreative.com or visit us over on Instagram to find out more about what we do. And if you enjoyed listening, please don't forget to rate and review Smart Beauty on iTunes, as it helps people find us. See you next time.